Sports Day for Kia. The new Kia Niro electric SUV range has landed. And Red Energy, awarded Canstar's most trusted energy retailer nationally for 2021. That's Red Energy.
7 minutes past six. Hello and welcome to Sports Day, the Thursday edition, the day after trade period. Jordan Dawson, arguably the biggest name next to Adam Cherrett, to move clubs, is going to join us in a matter of seconds. That's the deal that went down. The deal that didn't go down was Bobby Hill getting to the Bombers. His manager, Colin Young, is going to join us later in the show as well. It is a jam-packed show, plenty to discuss. There is a fresh challenge of Jeff Kennett and the Hawks presidency. We'll discuss that as well. But I'm not here by myself.
And now, here is the host of Jeopardy,
Jimmy Bartel.
Yes, Zoe, he's back on the panel and we like it. Now, for those of you who are wondering, what on earth did I just listen to? That's because our co-host, James Bartel, instead of going home and doing what normal people do, and that is watch Netflix or maybe Stan or maybe a little bit of Amazon Prime, maybe a DVD rerun that they haven't seen in a while, Jimmy goes home and watches old reruns of Jeopardy.
No.
With Alex Trebek.
Alex Trebek, your host for this evening. It's not a rerun to me because it's the first time I've seen it.
Yeah, but they are still are. How old are they? 20 years?
Yeah, I think because they've done so many because it's an institution in America. Jeopardy's been going on forever.
I'm surprised that you didn't watch these when they were coming out when you were in your late 20s.
Well, I don't think they were on Australian. I don't think they were on Australian free to air then. I found them. They're on Viceland.
I think our next guest, Jordan Dawson, would have absolutely no idea what Jeopardy is because he grew up in a different time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he's probably doing what normal 24-year-olds do. And he's got some good show. He's watching Squid Games on Netflix.
Oh, I've seen that. I've clocked that.
Oh, you've clocked it. Good Jordan job. Dawson's clocked trade period. He got it done. I'm not sure he personally, but finally the move went through. I'm sure there would have been some nervous days as he was waiting to make the move from the Swans to the Crows. He joins us live on Sports Day. Jordan, welcome to you. Congratulations.
Cheers. Thanks, Sam. Thanks, Jimmy. Thanks for having me.
A few nerves along the way, I'm sure.
Oh, definitely, yeah. I think the last 10 days have been pretty full on, but obviously it's a massive relief, getting the trade done. And both parties were somewhat happy, I think, so that's good.
Jordan, further that, obviously trade period, it's all, I guess, the misinformation that goes on, gets put out there and people offering all their opinions on it. How hard is it to tune that out and just listen to what, the Swans and the Crows are telling you?
Yeah, well, I just tried to stay off my phone as much as I could and not really read the media. Talking to Michael, my manager, and he was pretty clear before it sort of happened that, the trade week will be pretty busy and there'll be a lot of articles and a lot of media stuff, just obviously because that's the important time. So it's going to, not everything's going to be true that you read. So try and sort of stay away from it, which is what I did. Obviously it's a massive relief now.
Not going to make you, say what you didn't like about Port Adelaide, but what did you like about Adelaide that the Crows that made it attractive for you to go there?
Yeah, I think growing up I was a Crows fan and, idolised a few of those players like Ricciuto and McLeod and Tyson Edwards and these guys. And I think just the fit that, Nixie and the coaches put towards me of where they see me playing and the role I can play with the group was really enticing and I feel like I can add a lot to their group.
So, Jordan, what do you want to achieve now as an Adelaide player? I mean, it's interesting to me because obviously you've gone home, which we all understand, but you've left a team that really looks like it's on the precipice of challenging for a flag, for a side that may do that as well, but probably not as quickly. What's the main ambition for you in your first year at the Crows?
Yeah, for me, I think the demographic of the group is quite young. I think it reminds me of Sydney last year and probably the year before, just of they've been competitive in a lot of games, but the experience wasn't quite there. And I feel like I can sort of be one of the older guys in that younger group coming through and have sustained success. And obviously, I know that the last couple of years have been pretty tough for them, but they're definitely building. And I feel like I can add a lot to the group on and off the field and add some leadership as well.
positional wise. We saw you have a fantastic year, half back, wing, hitting the scoreboard, pushing forward. Cut and pace, put that in at the Crows or something a little bit different?
Yeah, I think so. I'm talking to Nixie and the coaches. I think that's where they want me to play, and I'm definitely happy with playing sort of up on the wing and mid and stuff like that. I feel like that's obviously where I play my best footy, and I feel like I can add a lot of value to the team up there as well.
Geez, they got you for a bit of a bargain, didn't they? Melbourne's future first, and that could be pick 18. You're a top 10, top 5 pick, aren't you, Jordan?
Oh, I wouldn't say that. I don't do the trades, mate. I just sat back and let the team sort that out. So I'm not sure. You're the expert in that area.
You don't make the waves. You just ride them.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, don't get sucked into that. Hey, is there a player from is there a player from the Crows that you're interested to get to know? Because when you go to another club or a player comes from another club, they've got a certain opinion of some players. Is there someone that you're interested to find out about or from another way that you'd love to just see how they go about their business?
Yeah, I think I've sort of already got to know Paul Seedsman a little bit, and feel like we can work pretty closely on the wings and with the midfield group. And he's a ripping fella, and I'm looking forward to sort of getting to know him a bit more and working more on field as well with him.
Jordan, can you just take us through whatever you want to tell us or don't want to tell us, the main reason for wanting to go home? Because, you know, obviously in a normal world, going home gets criticised when you can move so freely between state and state. But in the last 18 months or 2 years, COVID has really changed a lot of things with that. We've seen, you know, Lachie Neal and his partner and wife, Jules, wanting to raise their child in Western Australia. And, you know, in usual circumstances, it would be, well, you could just go home whenever you want. But Western Australia border is currently closed at the moment. Has COVID really made it harder for guys like you wanting to spend more time with their family?
Yeah, definitely. I think probably the last 2 years we've spent maybe 2 months, if not more, 3 months on the road both seasons. So that's been pretty testing, and that sort of pull to come back home and be closer to friends and family and be able to play footy was there. And yeah, I couldn't really deny it by the end when I requested a trade.
Maybe now you'll be too close. You're going to move straight back into the family home or make sure you find somewhere else quick smart?
Nah, I won't be doing that. the family are about 3 hours south in Robe. So
okay.
It might be a bit too far to travel, I think. But I'll just look for somewhere in Adelaide.
Which is a good excuse for you, not being home every single day of the week.
Exactly.
Jordan, it's great to have you on. I'm sure it's been a whirlwind, mate, the last 2 or 3 weeks. I can only imagine the anxiety that goes with wanting to be traded and it gets done on the second last day. But you're there now. Where do we find you at the moment? Are you in South Australia?
Yeah, yep. I've just been back and forth from Adelaide and Robe. So I'm just sort of hanging around those areas. I'll try and get up to Adelaide as much as I can before the pre-season starts. And I've already met a few boys and coaches and stuff, so it'd be nice to get familiar with everyone and the facilities and everything like that before we actually crack into it.
And no doubt you'll be winning the first time trial on day one of pre-season?
I think there's a few good runners, so I wouldn't put that bet on, but I'm looking to come back fit and healthy. That's the main thing.
Jordan, well done. Good luck in your first season at the Crows.
Cheers. Thanks for having me, boys.
Jordan Dawson, their new Adelaide recruit. First time we've had him on this show. Speaks very well. He's a good pickup for the Crows and I reckon a significant loss for the Swans. Taking the pick in the 50s, pick 56 a few years ago. So it's a nice pick for the Swans.
Yeah, well done by the Swans and their development, but they're very good at that. They've turned rookie list players into all Australians.
Tom Papley.
Yeah, they've got heaps of them. They've done that with, if you go back to Nick Smith and guys like that.
Nick Smith's a great one.
Yep. So, buy low, sell high. It's great list management, great development.
Jimmy Bartel is here for the new McCafe blend. Coffee fit for an Aussie. More on Sports Day after this. Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy and the new Kia Niro, the electric SUV range, which has now landed. A report surfacing today that Hawks president Jeff Kennett is now set for a new challenge, with a group of supporters setting up a campaign. So we already know about Australian super boss Ian Silk, and also that former premiership player Andy Gowers. Andy Gowers, the father of former Bulldog Billy Gowers, for what it's worth. Hawks for Change has backers among the club's coterie groups. Triple premiership player James Morrissey fronting the campaign. So we spoke to Jeff a couple of days ago. He got re-elected in October 2020 for 3 more years. So he's still got, what's that, the best part of 2 years left, or two years left.
Sorry, Sam. Because I saw that article come up and I was just curious who the people being. The Hawks for Change aren't saying Ian Silk and Andy Gowers shouldn't keep going for it. They're just gathering more people to challenge the board. Yeah. One of them I was just reading, Bruce Stevenson. This has been reported, so don't get stuck into us. Bruce Stevenson, who is a former director.
Yep.
You mentioned Morrissey. Also, Lynn Sutton, who is one of the coterie group leaders. So it's a lot of people from the coterie group. So the important people that help the club going on with big financial contributions every year.
So there's rumblings.
Yeah. They're disappointed with the way Jeff's handled certain things. That's the snapshot of the article. The exit of Alistair Clarkson.
13-13-32. I just want to take calls and get a temperature from this. Hawthorn fans, if you're listening, because when we had Jeff on, I got a lot of, and our show did, a lot of action on social media around, oh, well, Jeff took you guys to task and we're right behind Jeff. And that was very parochial Hawthorn fans supporting Jeff. But some others that you speak to say, well, we don't want him to be there anymore. And, you know, look what's happened to the club in the last 18 months. I am really interested as to whether Hawthorn fans are happy with Jeff at the helm or whether it is time for change now with a new coach.
What were they unhappy about with the questioning that wasn't already out in the public eye that Jeff had actually put?
No. You'd have to ask them. 13-13-32, Hawks fans, what do you make of these latest challenges? Do you think that Jeff is going to stay as president? Do you think that he should stay as president? 13-13-32 on the Harcourts open line. We'll find a prize for the best caller. Lawrence will go into his drawer of prizes. Another interesting thing that Andrew Wu wrote in the Sydney Morning Herald today, he had an interview with Andrew Pridham, who says that the AFL basically needs to close and change the mechanism which allows clubs who finish last, or not even just last, but towards the bottom, to use the threat of pre-season draft.
Hmm.
I actually agree with him. I thought that it was ridiculous Carlton got Jack Martin for free from the Gold Coast Suns. Now, weird situation because Gold Coast will say, well, we've had so many picks in that draft that we didn't need another one.
Hmm.
So we were happy to play the game and see if Carlton blinked, and Carlton didn't. So that was a weird situation. But I kind of agree with and Andrew actually goes out of his way to say it's not Adelaide's fault.
No.
And Mark Rusciuto went on radio and said, well, we've got the preseason draft, which they absolutely do. But do you think, Jimmy, in future, you shouldn't be allowed to get someone like a Jack Martin, someone like a Jordan Dawson for free if negotiations break down?
Yeah, well, it's not an even playing field to start with, and a lot of things in the AFL aren't, but it actually completely tilts it in the favour of having that lever to pull because then it's not a real negotiation.
I agree with that. I mean, who was the last player that...
Adelaide, when they got Jackson Hatley, they used the preseason draft as a threat, and it ended up happening, and they took him in the preseason draft.
Yep.
I think Essendon used, and this is where the conversation last night regarding Adrian Dodoro and Jace McCartney, where there's supposed angst between the two, even though the two gentlemen respect each other a lot, under Jai Caldwell, because Essendon had the leverage of using the preseason draft.
So who was the last player that, I mean, because the preseason draft is really for players that get delisted or that fall out of favour with their club and a deal can't get done or no one wants them and then they fall to a preseason draft. What I'm saying to you is, who was the last really good player who actually went into the preseason draft and got picked up by a club that he wasn't talking to? Last one I can think is Nick Stevens.
Well, didn't Luke Ball use that, but he put a lot of...
cash on his head.
Yeah.
That was different, though, because he was trying to get there. Nick Stevens was trying to get to Collingwood, and I think from memory, Port Adelaide wanted Alan Dydak to go the other way. I know that there's Collingwood and Port Adelaide fans yelling at the radio in unison at the moment saying that I'm wrong, but that's my memory of it. And then Port Adelaide... Collingwood said, okay, well, you're not going to let him go for free, so we'll just wait for you to blink. They didn't, and he ended up going to Carlton.
I get it, but I don't know what the solution is, and that's the problem. What solution do you come up with unless you do away with the preseason draft? Because it's always going to be a tool and a leverage. And if I'm a list manager and my sole responsibility is to my club, and again, it's not blaming any clubs, I'm using every tool available in the negotiating table.
Well, I think you'd have to say, it would have to be specific per example. It would have to say, if you nominate a club who finishes in the bottom four as the club that you want to be traded to, that club is not allowed to take them in the preseason draft.
Yeah.
It gets a bit messy.
Yeah.
It's interesting, though, if the AFL can look at the mechanism. I mean, Andrew Pridham's been very successful in footy for a long time. He knows what he's talking
Absolutely.
About. Absolutely. And it didn't sound like sour grapes when I'm reading the quotes that Andrew Wu wrote from him. It just sounded like, look, I'm not blaming Adelaide, but in future, if this situation happens again, and you just said you've been through it with GWS, we don't think it should be used as leverage.
No, and I agree. There's no clubs to blame, but it's a tool. It's an unfair tool, but that's part of the game.
It's part of it, yeah.
Our whole entire competition is unfair.
That's right. It's not a level playing field.
Yeah.
And we know that from interstate clubs versus Victoria. We know that from franchise and expansion clubs.
When you start a season with 18 teams with 22 for 23 rounds.
Automatically, you're not even.
It's not even.
Yeah. Rod's in Cape Patterson. Wants to talk about Jeff Kennett. G'day, Rod.
G'day. How are you, boys?
We're good.
Listen, yeah, good. Yes, I'm talking about Jeff Kennett.
Yep.
I'm not happy with him being in charge anymore. I also was extremely unhappy about the way that Clarko was handled. I have respect for Sam Mitchell. He was a fantastic player for us. But I just think that the whole thing is wrong. Jeff Kennett is a smart man, but his biggest problem is his mouth.
Yeah.
He says things before he thinks it through.
Yep, I think many people would agree with both of those statements. Firstly, being he's extremely intelligent, and the second is that he shoots from the hip a bit. Dave's in Melton. G'day, Dave.
G'day, Sam. Jimmy, how are we?
Dave, go ahead, mate.
Yeah, problem with Jeff is his DNA is the same DNA as car salesmen. They're all full of crap.
Thank you, Dave. Yep. Not quite as nice as Rod was.
I enjoy Jeff because he challenges the groupthink that goes on a bit in footy. Like, he's willing to debate. And he said that last night. He goes, I'm all for having debates. You can agree to disagree in football.
Absolutely.
Mm.
Yeah. But I think if any other president other than Jeff Kennett did what he did to Alistair Clarkson, I don't think he'd still be there.
It depends. It's not up to us. It's the Hawthorn members. And you just said you're getting robust feedback.
Yeah.
That they are big fans of it.
Yeah, I speak to a lot of Hawthorn people, and there's people on both sides. But, yeah, I think that my personal opinion on it, and this is not all on Jeff, but I think a large part of it is that Hawthorn have put Sam Mitchell under unnecessary pressure to start his coaching tenure.
He was always going to be under pressure, whether it was this year, next year, or 3 years taking over Clark.
No, but not like this. I think that in hindsight's such a wonderful thing, but I said at the time, they just needed to say to Alistair, if they didn't want him to be coach, they needed to say, look, we don't think we're going to renew your contract. We would love you to coach next year if you'd like to. We're not naming a replacement for you. There's no handover. And at the end of that period, you go to Sam and say, look, we want you to apply. We think you're a red hot chance of getting it, but we're not giving it to you yet. Do another year under Clarko, and then we'll get the best coach available. Mm. I just think that they've put, and I think Sam's going to be an amazing coach, by the way, so it might all be a moot point, but I think they've put him under unnecessary risk. And I think that Jeff could have fixed that. And I think haggling with Alistair Clarkson over money that absolutely owed him after they sacked him was ridiculous.
Yeah, I agree with that. But, mate, like you said, the decision might be right, but the execution just slightly off.
Decision may absolutely be right, but it's all about the optics. And the optics of it.
Oh, did you just go AFL terminology?
I didn't mean to.
Optics.
Maybe I need a break. We need a break. We'll be back after this.
Sam came into our club and played some significant footy in the first 2 years. He's had some troubles in his off-season. He really wants to become a midfielder, which was the conversation that we had with both him and his manager through this trade period. Then there's some things that Sam needs to do better. You'll all get to see whether Sam has a proper commitment to play at AFL level through what he does through this pre-season.
Oh, you'll all get to see if Sam has the proper commitment to play at AFL level.
To be a midfielder.
That's putting the acid.
That's good.
That's great. I think Chris Davies is one of the best heads of footy in the comp. I think he would have been great in the AFL job as well. Interesting. Sam Powell-Pepper. Can he get back to where he was? Hey, Do you know who Chloe McArdle is?
I can swim a bit, can't she?
Thank you. Today, broke the world record for the most amount of English Channel swims. It was her 44th.
How far is it for those people playing at home?
So it's 34 kilometres. It took her 10 hour and 1 minute. I'm sure she's annoyed it didn't take her 9 hours and 59 minutes. It's from the Point de la Côte in the French commune of Ordingen to Kent in southeast England, 34 Ks. She's also done the triple cross before.
Tumble turn?
So 34 one way, 34 back, 34 back. 102K swim.
I wonder what the rules are with that. Like, are you allowed, you have to touch the sand, turn around, come back, or are you allowed a bit of a rest?
That's very funny. I don't know. It is an amazing story. If you don't know much about it, we'll try to get her on. Lawrence, if you could just give Chloe a call, we'll get her on this week.
She's Sports Day Zone.
Sports Day Zone. She couldn't swim. She couldn't float at the age of 10. And she tells a story about how she was reasonably good at lots of different sports, but she was never great at anything. And she realised in her teens, the one weapon that she had that no one else had was her mind. And so she just decided that she was going to start long distance swimming. That is, I love those stories.
That's where you wish you could record your thoughts while you're swimming. It's not like you can chuck the iPod in.
What would she think about while she's swimming, by the way? What do you do while you're swimming the English Channel, which can't be warm? I think it's too cold for sharks. It's probably not that big of...
Yeah, well, that was the other thing. I hope there's nothing chompy below me.
Well, yeah, she hasn't got a cage.
No.
Campbell Brown's done the English Channel swim. I think he swam with a cage. I'm just trying to remember. Anyway, it's quite incredible. So 43 times.
Once is incredible.
She has done the English Channel cross. We might try to get her on. I just saw a video on the news of her being interviewed, and she looked fatigued. More sports day coming up, including Colin Young, player manager of Bobby Hill and Rory Lobb. Both didn't get where they wanted to go.
Andrew and Colin is the management team at Corporate Sports, because they've got a job to do and trying to do the best thing by their client and wishes at the moment. But we've got a job to do running a footy club, and the business is about winning games. So we can't go backwards.
Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy and the new Kia Niro. That was the voice of Jason McCartney, the head of footy, also the list manager of GWS, speaking to us last night. The Bobby Hill deal didn't go through. His manager is Colin Young, and he joins us live on Sports Day. Welcome, Colt.
Hi, guys. How you going?
We're good. You've had a night to sleep on it now, Colin. How do you sort of feel about Bobby going back to the Giants?
Yeah, not much sleep, but Bobby sort of... Well, he is Andrew McDougall's direct client. So, but I was certainly in the passenger seat to yesterday. Andrew was driving it. So it was a bit disappointing and deflating for everyone involved, the family, Bobby, and certainly us working through that didn't come off at the end.
So I just wanted to ask you from your perspective, because I think a lot of people are interested in how player managers work, Colin. Did you find out sort of too late? Like, would you have liked to have known weeks earlier that Bobby, in fact, wanted to go to Victoria? How did that all play out?
You always try and get as much time and leeway to help the clubs out if something like this is happening. I mentioned before when we had Brad Hill leave Fremantle and go to St Kilda, I notified, Fremantle basically in March that's what they're thinking, and then again in July that it was going to, they were definitely keen to go. So you try and give every person in the group or the party working with the opportunity as much time as they can to get this done. Going into the trade period, I thought that, I'd have the quietest trade period in 18 years. I wasn't going to have anything done. I knew that Bobby had met with Andrew, over a 2-year period, thinking that he might want to go and live in Melbourne with family and friends. He'd like the support down there. So I've also mentioned before that, I did have a chat with Graham Wright when he was at Hawthorn, that when they were looking for some small forwards, and I knew that Jason and the club had a really tight salary cap and a list spot, that maybe Zach Langdon and Bobby might go down there about 18 months ago. But Graham had a lot on his plate at that time, and in the end, I think Zach Langdon, we did go. Zach went to West Coast and Bobby stayed. So it's been hovering for a while, and as he's only 21 years of age, I'm not too sure, when I was 21, I was going to make this decision, made sure that he really took his time to make sure that this is what he wanted to do. And then probably about 2 weeks out, he mentioned Andrew and I at a function that he definitely wanted to go. So you know, you had a look at the clubs. I know people say there's 10 clubs in Melbourne, but not every club's looking for a small forward. We sort of thought there was 5 clubs to be involved, so we spoke to the 5 clubs. Of that, 2 really picked up the ball and ran with it, and that's when it came out. Basically, when I and I know it sounds strange, you know, we got the call from Jason Tuesday morning about 10:30. I was on the phone for about an hour and I got back to Jason about 11:30, and he mentioned that he'd spoken to Fremantle about the possible facilitation of a trade between GWS Fremantle and Rory Lobb. So myself, you know, thinking, well, this could happen now, because if Bobby does pull the trigger, which I think he will, you know, we might be able to remove, put some of his contract towards Rory's, and the deal could get done as long as all the clubs, you know, got what they were looking for at the end of the deal.
So Adrian Dodoro told us last night, Colin, that they knew about a week before. So this is basically the start of the second week of trade period, or the start of the first week if you count the, when it officially starts. When did GWS know?
I think the Friday. So Tuesday they rang me about Rory, and I reckon Friday mid-afternoon, Andrew might have spoke to Jace. Unfortunately, Andrew's not here at the moment, otherwise I'd put him on for you. Maybe give him a call next week to have a chat. So Friday afternoon. So
Friday with what, 5 days left of the trade period?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, that's right.
That doesn't leave a lot of time for you to get a deal done, does it?
No, well, if the planets lined up, it was okay. And I think you guys were saying through this that a future second was a pretty good deal for GWS. It probably didn't leave a lot of time for GWS to look for a forward, or if they thought, you know, if they needed a small forward to replace Bobby. I was always thinking that they might want the big, you know, lead-up forward of Roy back, and probably could get away with Bobby leaving. And that's where, unfortunately, I think Jason also mentioned on the media this morning or yesterday that, you know, clubs look for opportunities, and it's possible that sometimes, or someone else's strategy at another club might, you know, meet with what they were looking for or looking to do with GWS, but unfortunately it wasn't the case this time.
And so you had a situation that really was affecting both of your players, and it could have helped both of your players.
I thought it could, and I thought it could help everyone. You know, you certainly, you know, when you're going to trade, I know it sounds strange and people don't believe it, but I think most of the more experienced managers look for a pathway that's going to suit all parties, and it's a win for everyone, you know, and the members are happy, the supporters are happy, the media, that's a good deal for everyone, that's well done, got done. So that's what, you know, we honestly were looking forward to do. But unfortunately, you know, it just it didn't happen, unfortunately. Yeah.
Colin, Jimmy Bartelli, obviously I've stayed out of that chat there for obvious reasons, but I've got one for you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I've got one for you. It's... the NBA, of course, there's a lot of news going on with Kyrie Irving and the fact that he doesn't want to get vaccinated for whatever reasons, and it's created a big situation for his team.
And Kyrie's just been told that he's not allowed to be a part-time player. So yes. It's either get vaxxed or bye-bye.
So what happens in the AFL? Because we will have a decision on this soon regarding vaccination requirements for players. How will you manage that as a player manager?
Well, I've been back, so I'm all good to go. But you're talking about players. Funny enough, I did some media this afternoon regarding a West Coast Eagle player. There were some rumours and innuendo about Jack Darling not wanting to get vaxxed, being an anti-vaxxer, which was not true. But basically, you know, the nation knows that if you don't get vaxxed, you know, you won't be on a plane, you won't be allowed to, you know, enter a stadium. So I'm pretty sure that, you know, if you want to continue playing football, you'll need to get vaxxed.
What would happen, Cole, if you had a client of yours that didn't want to?
Well, unfortunately, he wouldn't be able to play. It's out of my hands. He, you know, legally, he won't be able to probably play football because he won't be able to play, and he won't be in the stadium. But, and he loses, I'd imagine, unless there's something there that I haven't read, he'd probably lose his contract.
But existing contracts wouldn't have that written into them, would they?
Well, that's interesting, yeah.
No, they didn't. No, they don't. But as I said to you, sometimes, you know, there's the new CBA that's been done for the AFLPA coming up soon. I know that they're in discussions with the AFL. You know, there could be, you know, a possible, you know, something put into this. I don't know. It's sort of out of my hands. But basically, I know if I want to travel and meet my clients, I've got to be vaxxed. I'm vaxxed. I'm ready to go. I'm just hoping our Premier will let me get out and get back as soon as we can, because I'd like to get on the road again. But that's what my understanding is, Jimmy. That's, you know, you're going to have to be backs. And I haven't heard of anyone. I only heard the rumours about a couple of West Coast players, but certainly none of my players that we represent have said that they're not going to get backs. So it looks all good from our point of view.
Yeah, just a bit of news. Tomorrow is the deadline day for the first jab, and then you're not allowed to attend the football club.
So you that's here in Victoria. Yeah, they've mandated it. Yeah, October 15th. You've got to have a first jab to be able to work.
Yep.
Well, definitely all our WA players playing in Victoria have all been jabbed, so we're all good to go.
So you're in WA now, Cole. You can't really.
Yeah, I am.
You can't really leave the state, can you?
Oh, I could probably get over to Adelaide and back, but Scotty Lightfoot's over here. Sammy Powell-Pepp will probably be back soon. I think most of our players are back from Adelaide, so we'll catch up from over here. But as I said, as soon as those borders open up and I'm allowed to come back, I'll be over there and I'll probably spend a month or so in Victoria just getting back into it, because that's where it all happens.
We just had a bit of audio played from Chris Davies actually talking about Sam Powell-Pepp, saying, you know, we'll find out in the next couple of months if he wants to work hard enough to become an AFL midfielder. Is this a big year for him in that regard?
Yeah, it's a big year. As you know, when you're out of contract, you know, it seems to be that it's a pretty big year for that, but it is a big year. And the conversation that Sam's had with Chris and probably Cripper has been honest, and you can't, that's the best thing in with the AFL, with these clubs, that the honesty is the best policy, and certainly a direct conversation with Sam where it sits, where he wants to go. With playing in the midfield, they've had that, and I'm pretty sure he'll be back, and you'll find a huge, fit, flying bull playing in the centre next year with Port. They've got some, you know, Cripper's put probably one of the best lists together in the AFL. I actually tipped them for the flag this year, so I got that wrong. But they've got those stars, Rosie and Butters, that probably could go in the midfield with a bit of flair. So he'll be up against it, but he knows he has to do it. And, it's going to be an interesting year next year.
It is. A week's a long time in footy. A year's an even longer time. Could we see a situation where Bobby Hill starts for a side that charges towards a grand final or preliminary final and then decides to actually he's going to stay?
Yeah, that's a conversation that we'll probably have with Bobby and his family next week. Bobby took up to see some family in Northern, and his dad stayed behind. His dad actually sat with Andrew and I during the trade period yesterday. So he came into the office about 10:30, sat down with Andrew, and he sat with us all the way through, listening to our phone calls, listening to how we're operating. And then we went for a beer straight after. It was obviously pretty deflating, but we all agreed to catch up next week to have a chat. Bobby is out of contract next year. So, you know, it's going to be an interesting year looking at that one as well, to see how it all goes with the support over there, with GWS.
Cole, thanks for coming on. Really appreciate it.
No, thanks, guys. Cheers, boys.
Colin Young there from Corporate Sport Australia, play manager of Bobby Hill and Rory Lobb, as well as the likes of Sam Powell-Pepper and a few others. More on Sports Day with Jimmy Bartel after this.